Support for KBOO comes from our listeners. If you value independent media, go to kboo.fm and click donate. And thank you for supporting your community radio station.
Fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close the missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sold Out Music Festival happening now until April 20th at venues all over Portland. The Sold Out Music Fest seeks to bring together people of all generations and backgrounds to celebrate the music that helps to bind our collective culture together. Legends of New Orleans jazz, the luminaries of Brooklyn hip-hop, the queen of modern soul music, and more are performing together under one banner. Bands, venues, bios, and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 10:01 a.m. At 11 on the Radio Zine, host Lisa Loving speaks with Ariel Gore about her book, The End of Eve, about her years spent caring for her dying mother. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, we hear an interview with Ali Abu Nima and a tribute to the late journalist Robert Knight. Before all that, coming up is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Keep it locked right here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Cascadia. Today is Friday, April 18th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We're going to be speaking to Robert Naiman with Just Foreign Policy in a few moments. We have some to-the-point headlines that are not to be found in mainstream media, which is, of course, why we're here. The volume of oil hauled on Oregon's rails increased. Get this. 250% in 2013. And that's a serious increase along a route through Portland, Scappoose, St. Helens, and Rainier. That's nearly 20,000 tank cars pushing along 11 million barrels of oil through Oregon. That's up enormously from 2012. And we haven't even, we're still fighting the good fight, showing up at meetings and hearings, protesting this. And that this is just a regular, normal day. And at a time when organized labor is at low ebb, and when union membership, by some accounts, has fallen to pre-World War I levels, and overt hostility to labor is rising everywhere. Pat Maloney is an unapologetic, unreconstructed union man. But Maloney himself, a Boeing worker, is keeping the faith. He's joining a reform plank of candidates seeking to replace the current national leadership of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Go Maloney. We'll see how that campaign plays out. And while lawsuits stalled megaloads and Governor Kitsama dreams of a bridge over congestion, ODOT frets the gas tax in the dawn of a gas-free future. Earth first, as always, and others envision a future without cars at all. Beyond the top obvious elements of this vision, there's also a very credible plan for a new kind of growth that does not rely on endless exploitation of the Earth's dwindling resources and the endless expansion of human presence on Earth. Earth firsters have a very a reasonable, doable plan. Tim DeChristopher, your spirit never sleeps, bitter number 70. On Thursday, yesterday, beginning at 9:30 in the morning, the Idaho Board of Land Commissioners offered gas and oil leases of state lands and subsurface mineral rights for sale to the highest bidder. That means somebody could actually sell the land a mile under your house. When your house falls in the hole, the people who dug the hole will be long gone. So will your house. North Dakota recently discovered piles of garbage bags containing radioactive waste dumped by oil drillers in abandoned buildings. Now the state's trying to catch up to an oil industry that produces about 27 tons of radioactive debris from wells daily. Yeah, and you thought, well, we all thought that the oil was bad enough. Turns out we've got the radioactive debris to worry about as well. And before time escapes us, we do have Robert Naiman waiting patiently on the line. Monsanto's been up to its usual as far as labeling GMO foods, and we have more from coming out of North Dakota, and much of what's coming out of North Dakota is flowing straight towards us. So it's time to duck and cover or get out there and stand up for what's left of the natural environment here in the Pacific Northwest. Well, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry spoke with Saudi Arabian Foreign Minister Prince Saud Al Faisal, and what we're wondering about is this anti-tank rockets in Syria, and did Congress, known for its obfuscation and obstructionism, they seem to have let this one slide. Putting the pieces together here is difficult, given the fact that most people in the State Department really don't seem to understand what's going on. But one person does, Robert Naiman. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be with you.
Good afternoon, your time. Robert Naiman, of course, with Just Foreign Policy. You wrote a piece that was in an op-ed in Truth Out. And I wondered if some of the questions that you raise, and in fact answer, this is troubling, and it makes you wonder what else the U.S. is involved in a region where it is demonstrably incapable of finding its anti-tank assets with both hands, as it were. What about Congress in this? How do these pieces fit together?
Well, first of all, it should be noted that we had a huge debate not very long ago about the U.S. military involvement in Syria when the president proposed to bomb Syria. And that debate was decisively resolved against a U.S. military intervention in Syria civil war. Now it's being reported that that U.S.-built anti-tank weapons are showing up in the hands of Syrian rebels. Some say having been supplied by Saudi Arabia. Some say perhaps having been supplied by Turkey. Seems like Saudi Arabia is more likely from the speculation. But in any event, under U.S. law, the United States government had to agree, had to be notified and had to agree in order for these weapons to be transferred to Syria. But in the press reports on this, there's no indication of when that happened and who signed off. In particular, who in Congress signed off on this major military escalation. Now, to see why it's major, consider the fact that in the past, anti-tank weapons supplied to so-called moderate Syrian rebels have wound up in the hands of a group in Iraq that's so extreme that they got kicked out of Al-Qaeda and is using these weapons to attack the U.S.-supported Iraqi army. So this is something that should have been publicly debated and members of Congress should have weighed in on publicly for or against before this happened. Not only that, but at the same time that the government, that this supply of anti-tank weapons was being mooted, the supply of so-called man pads, shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles, that can be used to shoot down civilian aircraft. This is something widely acknowledged as a terrorism proliferation risk. You supply these weapons to somebody in Syria, they give them to somebody else. Soon anti-U.S. or anti-Israeli or anti-some U.S. ally terrorists have weapons that can be used to shoot down civilian aircraft. Again, where is the congressional, and it was reported that the administration was considering this, has decided not to. Where was the congressional debate on such a momentous decision, which, by the way, would violate U.S. law and multiple international agreements that the U.S. has signed?
Yeah, it's the other thing that it seems that whoever this the word of, I think that they that gets as being bounced around as Washington is acquiescence, as opposed to democratic process, but there is still no clear idea of the resistance, the anti Bashar al-Assad forces in Syria, whether those are not extremists, so we don't know. There are many different groups, and pumping more weapons into a region where the U.S. has no idea where those are going to eventually wind up and what they are going to be doing once they wind up there. So, okay, let's say that through acquiescence and not Congress, this stuff got there. Who's tracking it? Who's tracking what happens to the military hardware that once it gets over there? Do we know?
Well, inside what's happening inside the U.S. government, we don't know. Of course, the administration has told members of Congress, we've got the situation under control, but we have reason to believe that that is not true from what's happened in the past, that they don't control the weapons that they have supplied and won't be able to control the weapons that they've supplied in the future. In terms of who's tracking it outside the government, well, people in the press are clearly trying to track it, and to some extent they're able to. So, for example, one of the reasons that we know that these U.S.-made anti-tank weapons have showed up in Syria is that they showed up in rebel videos. People who know these weapons watched the videos and said, hey, those are U.S. weapons. And they told other people, and then that got in the press. So lots of people are trying to follow this. That doesn't mean that we necessarily know everything that's going on.
So, as far as the limits to U.S. involvement, backing of the insurgency, it And as you point out, the enormously dominant role played by Islamist militants. So it seems like this is a free for, this is turned into a free for all, and that nobody, perhaps with the exception of the Saudis, is really keeping track of this. Can you? Oh, we're out of time, it seems. I hear the theme coming up. I wanted to ask you about the Saudi role in monitoring the situation. I guess instead what we'll ask you to do is to give listeners the website and where they can read what you wrote and follow some of the links there to track. You know, if somebody's got to be minding the story. It usually ends up these days falling to citizen journalists and investigative reporters to keep an eye on what's happening wherever possible. So this would be at Truth Out or Just Foreign Policy. Can you let us know more on that?
Yes, but also, I mean, I think the key thing is the more political controversy, the more reporting, the more members of Congress will be pressing for information, the more we'll know. So if people are concerned about this, they need to get in touch with members of Congress and say, hey, what are you doing about this? You're supposed to be overseeing this. What's going on? Did you sign off on supplying these weapons? Do you have an opinion on supplying man pads to Syria? Are you going to do something about it? The Congress could explicitly prohibit the transfer of man pads to Syria if they want it. So if people want Congress to do that, then they should tell Congress.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Robert. My guest, of course, has been Robert Nayman, just from Foreign Policy. The piece that we're talking about is an op-ed, appeared in Truth Out recently. Thanks again for that, Robert. We have other stories here. I'll have to put those up on the KBOO website, along with links to this and other pieces. This has been a Cascadia for Friday, April 18th, 2014. Sam Parrish engineered the show today. Thanks so much for that, Sam. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Thanks, Kathleen. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.